And we're back. This is Jim Santel with you this morning, also with Connor here. The studios have WAUK Radio in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Right before the break and during the course of this hour, we're talking about January 6th and the big takeaways from this past week, the committee revelations, principally through some testimonies, some video, again, some very compelling information about what was going on behind the scenes right before January 6th, the attack on the riot. And then we can also talk about the day, January 6th itself, that also is incredibly revelatory about what our former president knew and thought about, and the role that our former vice president played in pushing back and refusing to go along with this Eastman plan, this proposal to overturn the election and send the decision-making authority back to the states. And right before the break, we were talking about this very, very interesting meeting that's happening on January 4th, a couple of days right before the insurrection itself. Greg Jacob, who is the principal counsel for the vice president in the Oval Office with President Trump and John Eastman, having this conversation about what they're going to be doing. Along the way, according to Greg Jacob, Eastman says, "I am here to request that you reject the electors." And again, we know because of what happened next that Eastman knew at the time that kind of request was unconstitutional. There's no basis for it. And indeed, as a part of our focus these days on the Supreme Court, very interesting to note that Mr. Jacob was very certain about having the law on his side, not on the Eastman side. And as he discussed these various legal arguments, all of which were just incredible, not founded, not predicated upon any rational basis, Mr. Eastman, who was the author of this overall design involving electors, involving things going on in the well of the Congress, Eastman himself admitted that his theories would fail 9-0 before the United States Supreme Court if they were ever tested in that particular venue. So we know all of those kinds of things going on. A lot of problems in terms of the internal discussions being had there. And why am I focusing on this? Because it does go to the president's knowledge, right? His intent. A lot of focus these days in the midst of the revelations by the committee about what the president knew and what he didn't know. We knew last week, we know again this week, that virtually everyone, perhaps including Mr. Eastman himself, the very designer, the author of this mechanism, this unfounded mechanism to overturn the electoral results, all of them knew that what they were doing was not only illegal, contrary to law, but had no viability under any constitutional principle. And that resulted in the president's having to know that his own advocacy publicly at that time and certainly afterwards, indicating that this was in fact a big lie, that indeed the election had been stolen, and that the proposals that he was putting together privately to overtake the election results, the accurate election results, frankly, were inconsistent with what actually happened here. And so along the way, during the course of this past week, we also get this very chilling concern about the health and the welfare, the safety, the security of the vice president himself. There's a fellow named Mark Short, who's the chief of staff for the vice president. And a day before the mob violence, after this meeting in the Oval Office, Mr. Short gets very concerned about the president's actions. And he goes to the Secret Service and says that he is concerned about the president publicly turning against the vice president, potentially creating a security risk to Mr. Pence himself. This is his own vice president. And again, underscoring not only the volatility, the horror of what's going on inside our government at the time, right before January 6th, but also perhaps down the road, critically important, the knowledge that our former president had about his conduct. He knew in fact that what he was doing was not only illegal, unconstitutional, but completely contrary to the facts. That may become very, very significant if in fact the U.S. Department of Justice does in fact under Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, decide to pursue a criminal prosecution against any of these players, including arguably the former president of the United States of America. Here's an interesting little insert that goes back to our discussion during the first hour about the role of religion. religion, in government, and the extent to which the free exercise clause has meaning. Mr. Jacob, who again is the principal attorney for the vice president, says during the course of this horrific event, where we were concerned about his boss's safety and security, pushing back, as is Mike Pence, against the president, these initiatives, these attempts to try to overthrow the results of the Electoral College, Mr. Jacob says that his faith sustained him throughout the ordeal. And what does he say under oath? He says he pulled out his Bible in the secure location with Mr. Pence and read a passage in which Daniel is thrown into the lion's den after he refuses a king's order but is protected by God. And I would offer that's the kind of thing that indeed you can do. That is proper exercise of your religious liberties under the First Amendment. And it's the kind of thing we were chatted about during the course of our first hour. So many of these issues are much related. And that one, of course, happening on January 6th, which leads to the other portion of this, which goes to the very events of January 6th. And once again, where Mike Pence was, what he was doing. An incredible, once again, exchange between the president and the vice president. What do we know from the testimony of just this past Thursday? We know that at about 11:20 a.m. on January 6th, the president calls the vice president. The president is at the Oval Office, the White House, calls the vice president, who is at his residence at the Naval Observatory, up the street there in Washington, D.C., and the vice president steps away from his own staff that is dealing with things related to January 6th, and they have a conversation, that is the president and the vice president. And the group in the Oval Office could apparently hear this side of the phone call. During the course of the testimony from witnesses, including Mr. Jacob, during the course of the proceedings this past week, what we know about that is that the folks in the Oval Office hear the word wimp. A fellow named Nick Luna says, and he's an aide to the president, says in a videotape testimony that wimp is the word that I remember. This is the president calling the vice president a wimp, plainly for the vice president refusing to go along with his overall plan to overthrow the election. Mr. Pence, according to all the testimony, including the testimony of his own lawyer, says he is holding firm in his refusal to give in. And this call becomes very, very difficult to ignore, both in the Oval Office and for people with the vice president himself. The chief of staff at that time, the president's chief of staff, Julie Radford, appeared in a videotaped testimony to say that Ms. Trump, I'm sorry, this is the vice president's daughter's, Ivanka Trump's chief of staff, not the president's chief of staff, told her shortly after this call that Mr. Trump had this upsetting conversation with Mr. Pence. And the president, Ms. Radford, said, I used the P word and said, you can either go down in history as a patriot or you can go down in history as something else. This is a very, very not just difficult phone conversation, but truly indicates the complete devolution, the complete breakdown of the relationship between the vice president and the president during that very period of time when all of us were observing things on January 6th. Mr. Pence, the vice president, comes back after this very difficult phone call with the president and tells his staff that he had just had this phone call. According to those folks in the room of the vice president, including Mr. Jacob, the vice president looks steely, nonetheless determined, grim to go ahead and not follow this plan. We know as well that in the hours that followed that phone call, the president goes out onto the Ellipse and tells the people publicly who are gathered there, tells the American population because it was televised. He says, I hope Mike is going to do the right thing. I hope so, because if Mike Pence does the right thing, we win. All of that language, which we remember very clearly from that Ellipse event, that happened after this very, very tumultuous conversation between the president and the vice president, plainly the ultimate breakdown in their relationship. And then we know as well, of course, that the vice president is at the Capitol, at the time that the insurrection happens. He is beginning to count those electoral votes. And much of that now we've seen in the video as the attack is underway. The other significant thing that focuses on the vice president himself, and again, this the extent to which people knew what was going on and the importance of Mike Pence pushing back against this initiative. We're going to chat about that right after the next break in our final segment and some final observations about the takeaways from these big events being described by the January 6th committee just this past week. Also taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. Stay with us for the final segment here. We're talking about January 6th and the big lessons, the big takeaways, information otherwise from the committee findings.